Hello, how's everybody doing today? I am Mark Aniceto from the Mark Aniceto Podcast, and today I'm going to do part of my series, The History of Music, and this is part two of 1966. This is between April through June. It's on every 3 months per episode. Yeah, I'm excited about this. I'm excited about this episode. This is going to be probably one of the best episodes I did overall. I think this is going to be one of the best ones of 1966 so far. So much to cover. There's a lot of great albums came out during this period. It was amazing. So let's get started. April through June of 1966. Before I start, of course, I'm reading off the sources here I used for this episode. I used Wikipedia. I used a book called 1966, The Year the Decade Exploded by John Savage, published in 2015, which I also used in the last episode, but never decided to say that was my fault, and I apologize for that. I also, again, used the Beatles Anthology book from 2000. And I also used this Psychedelia, 101 Iconic Underground Rock Albums, 1966 to 1970, by Richard Morton Jack, published in 2017. And I took an article off of a website called Far Out. It's a UK website. But I took an article from 2016, and I'm going to read that whole article in this episode. So, it's called Far Out. Again, it's a music website, excuse me. Let's get started. Before I get started, I want to define a term here that I'm going to use in this episode and future episodes soon down the road. The term is called the concept album. Now, according to Google, the defined concept album is a rock album featuring a cycle of songs expressing a particular theme or idea. So, remember that. Alright, April. Santa Barbara-based garage rock band The Dovers released the 45, The Third Eye, a record that was heavily psychedelic. Bob Dylan releases the 45, Rainy Day Woman number 12 and 35. The song has Dylan pleading that everyone must get stoned. The Chiffons released a 45, Sweet Talking Guy. San Jose Garage Rock Band. The band is called Syndicate of Sound. It's a band from San Jose, California, a garage rock band. They released a 45 called Little Girl. The song gave the band a national hit and became forerunners of the psychedelic rock genre. Sorry there, I had an issue there. I didn't write down the band's name on that, so I had to look it up for a minute. So anyway, let's continue. The Sir Douglas Quintet released a 45, Quarter to Three. Garage rock band The Leaves releases the 45, Hey Joe. James Brown and the Famous Flames released a 45, It's a Man's World. British band The Pretty Things released a 45, Come See Me, back with the B-side, LSD. LSD had more of R&B influence as opposed to psychedelic. Lyrically, however, pays references to the drug. New York singer-songwriter Neil Diamond releases the 45, Solitary Man. The Turtles released their second album called You Baby. Hits from the album include the title track and Let me be. Los Angeles garage rock band The Seeds released their self-titled debut album. Hits from the album include Can't Seem to Make You Mine, Pushing Too Hard, and Try to Understand. April 1st, R&B duo Sam and Dave released their first album titled Hold On, I'm Coming. The album features the self-titled hit and You Don't Know Like I Know. April 1st. April 6th, the Beatles began recording a song called Mark One, later changed to The Void, which eventually was renamed to Tomorrow Never Knows. April 12th, in Los Angeles, California, Jan Berry of Jan and Dean crashes his Corvette into a truck that is parked on Whittier Boulevard. Berry slips into a two-month-long coma and suffers total physical paralysis for over a year, as well as extensive brain damage. And that was pretty much a full quote from Wikipedia, so I use that. April 15th, British band Manfred Mann releases the 45 Pretty Flamingo. The song featured Jack Bruce on bass guitar, who was a member of Manfred Mann for a short time. And if you're familiar with Jack Bruce's bass playing, you can definitely tell that's him on there. Definitely. April 15th, the Rolling Stones released their fourth British album, titled Aftermath. Highlights from the album include the drug song Mother's Little Helper, the Baroque-inspired Lady Jane, Under My Thumb, and Out of Time. April 15th, Simon & Garfunkel releases the 45 I Am A Rock. April 22nd, British band The Troggs released the 45 Wild Thing. April 23rd, for the first time since January 18th of 1964, the Billboard Hot 100 chart fails to have an artist from the UK with a top 10 record, ending a 117-week streak. April 30th, 11 Spoonful releases the 45, Did You Ever Have to Make Up Your Mind? In May, Ike and Tina Turner released the 45, River Deep Mountain High. The Electric Prunes released their debut 45, Ain't It Hard. The song contains references to LSD. Such lyrics were rare during this period. Los Angeles garage rock band The Standells released the album Dirty Water. Hits from the album include the title track, which was an ode to Boston, Medication, Sometimes Good Guys Don't Wear White, and Rary, I don't know. May 1st, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Who perform at the New Musical Express's Poll Winners Show at the Empire Pool in Wembley, London. This was the Beatles' last conventional live concert in Britain. The show was videotaped for a later broadcast. The Beatles and Rolling Stones performances were omitted due to union conflicts. May 2nd, country singer Buck Owens and his Buckaroos released the album Thus on Mother's Bible. Also on May 2nd, Johnny Cash releases the album Everybody Loves a Nut. The album features the folk spoof The One on the Right is on the Left. Stevie Wonder, on May 4th, Stevie Wonder releases the album Uptight. Hits from the album include Uptight, Everything Is Alright, Love A Go-Go, a cover of Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind, and Nothing's Too Good for My Baby. On May 4th, also, Brian Wilson begins work on Good Vibrations. May 6th, British band The Small Faces released the 45 Hey Girl. May 6th, Paul Revere and the Raiders released their fifth album titled Midnight Ride. Hits from the album include Kicks, Little Girl in the Fourth Row, and Melody for an Unknown Girl. Excuse me. May 11th, British band The Small Faces released their self-titled debut album. Hits from the album include What You Gonna Do About It and Sha-la-la-la-lee. Okay. May 13th, Northern Ireland's Vem releases a cover of Simon Garfunkel's original Richard Corey. I mentioned in the last episode of that the lead singer for them, Van Morrison, went on on a solo career after their first, after the second album was released. He was still with them for a while after the album came out, but it was like that was the last album he appeared on, so. But he was still with them in this period, so. But he didn't even leave, like, then, you know. Well, just to be exact. Okay. May 13th, the Rolling Stones released a 45, Paint It Black. The song features a sitar played by Brian Jones. The Netflix documentary Little Echoes in the Canyon, which talks about the whole California sound and Laurel Canyon, you know, in the 60s and early 70s. Michelle Phillips and Mamas and Papas talked about how her and her husband John, also, of course, of Mamas and Papas, lived very close to Brian Wilson and his wife Marilyn. And there was one time when they, when John and Michelle went to their house and they walked in the front door, all you saw was Steinway piano and the whole floor covered in sand. And I think it was Brian's wife Marilyn and Michelle like were looking at each other and thought, what's going on with this guy? He's kind of crazy. Like, maybe crazy, but he's writing some good material. That being said, May 16th, the Beach Boys released their 11th album and their masterpiece album called Pet Sounds. I took an article from a website called Far Out, and the article is titled How Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys Created the Seminal Album Pet Sounds. And it was written on the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the album's release, which was May 16th, 2016. The writer in the article, it states here in the beginning it was created by the Far Out staff. At the end of the article, it states someone's name here. I'm going to set his name here. His name is Jimmy Kasson. Jimmy Kasson. So, here's the article. 50 years later, Pet Sounds, Beach Boys. Released on this day in 1966, there was one album which sincerely changed the face of American culture and utterly redefined pop music forever. We're revisiting the brilliant Pet Sounds. We take a look back at the Beach Boys, a band previously built on the fundamentals of pop, will go on to challenge the great and the good of the experimental music world. The album to do it, Pet Sounds, the record that would cement Brian Wilson as an intense and indelible genius. It's December 23rd, 1964, on board a flight from LA to Houston. A troubled man lays in the aisle, shrieking and crying, his sound only dampened by the pillow clutched to his face. His brothers try to comfort him in vain, and when the plane lands at its destination, he is eventually corseted and escorted to his hotel room, where he finally regains some composure. This man is Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. The band had been touring non-stop for the past 3 years, and after his latest breakdown, Brian Wilson called time on touring and informed the band he would have to be replaced for live performances. This was the only way for him to create more songs for the band. Fast forward almost a year to around November of 1965, and Brian is sat with friends in his apartment when another friend arrives late to the party with a copy of the Beatles album, Rubber Soul. Wilson recalls, I don't know if it had been released yet, but he had it, so we put it on the record player, and wow, as soon as I started hearing it, I loved it. I mean, loved it. That night, Wilson declared that he couldn't think of an album with a better collection of songs. He would set to work the following day making what would later be known as Pet Sounds. Wanting to depart from his usual collaborators, Wilson contacted Tony Asher, a former ad agency worker who had been writing jingles and radio skits for Max Factor Cosmetics, amongst others. The Beach Boys were overdue a new album, and with the band away on touring duties, and label, frothing at the mouth, frothing in the mouth, excuse me. Wells and the Astros set about writing. Although all the songs, themes, and lyrical content were devised by Wilson, Astor served as an interpreter, and the final placement of words was largely attributed to him, and he deserves tremendous credit. This would sit and talk about life and love and relationships to set a kind of mood for the sessions, and sit and work at a piano with Brian's ideas. Between January and April of 1966, Wilson enlisted the services of a group of classically trained session musicians, dubbed the Wrecking Crew, something devised by the ensemble's drummer, Hal Blaine, because some of the older session players thought they would wreck the music industry with their rock and roll stylings. These were the same session musicians Phil Spector utilized in creating his now legendary wah of sound recording concept. Although Spector was only 26, he had a string of hits to his name and had been producing for some years. Brian was only 23 and suddenly had all these older musicians at his disposal. The opportunities were endless. The sessions were very stop-start, with some days consisting of just meeting in the studio with others being cut short because people weren't achieving Wilson's vision. A lot of experimentation took place with the use of, at the time, very unconventional recording techniques and instrumentation. And an expert from tape recordings, Wilson can be heard asking the engineer if it would be possible to bring a horse into the sessions. When the Beach Boys first listened to the sessions upon their return from Japan, there was a mixed reaction. Mike Love in particular was very unhappy with some of the lyrical themes and refused to sing the lyrics Asher and Wilson had written. There was great fear at the time of messing with a formula that had been largely successful for the group across America. Wilson's intention to make the group grow musically and compete with the likes of the Beatles and Phil Spector was met with robust resistance. However, some refining of the lyrics, largely to appease Love, the album was finished, costing Capitol Records around $500,000 in today's money. This made it one of the most expensive albums ever. The record executives were completely baffled and disappointed when they heard the final mixes. Instead of sun-drenched pop songs about girls and surfboards, they received introspective and subversive, melancholic masterpiece, not what they had hoped for at all. So concerned were they of the commercial failure of the record, they hurriedly rushed out the Beach Boys' Greatest Hits compilation less than 2 months after the release of Pet Sounds. The compilation went gold, while Pet Sounds escaped into the top 10 in the USA. Fortunately, it did better than in the UK, largely due to the efforts of Bruce Johnston. In a sense, Pet Sounds was pretty much abandoned from birth by the ones who should have been there to help it grow. If it weren't for that fateful breakdown on the airplane in late 1964, and had not decided to stop touring, thus creating time and space for himself to work without fear of reprisal from his own band, this LP may never have time to gestate. Today it celebrates its 50th anniversary and stands as a testament for any person or artist vehemently defend their right to see out their own vision. It's regarded as one, if not the greatest popular LP of all time, and could have gone so differently. Wouldn't it be nice if we hadn't had to wait so long? And the track list here goes as follows on the album Pet Sounds. Okay. Side 1. Wouldn't it be nice? You still believe in me? That's not me. Don't talk, put your head on my shoulder. I'm waiting for the day. Let's go away for a while. Sleep, John B. Side 2. God only knows. I know there's an answer. Here today. I just wasn't made for these times. Pet Sounds and Caroline, no. Trackless. And this is a period too, Brian Wilson obviously smoked marijuana. He was also probably involved in LSD. He also got involved with speed. And there's a story about which also was in the Netflix documentary, Echoes in the Canyon. There was I don't know when it took place, but Brian Wilson went over to Roger McGuinn's house of the Byrds, and went over to his house and he asked for some speed. He wanted two tablets, and Roger gave him two tablets from his medicine cabinet, and they both started writing a song together. And it was a couple of hours process before McGuinn went to bed finally. I think McGuinn woke up around maybe 2 o'clock in the morning or so, and there's Brian Wilson on the piano, still playing away the song they were trying to write together. The song wasn't released in 1977 on the Beach Boys album, at the time, and the song was called "Ding Dang." It was like a 58-second song, all that for 8 hours of work. No, I'm joking, but yeah, it was like 58 seconds long, and it was like a little like. It was called "Ding Dang," and it was written by McGuinn and Will and Brian Wilson together, and it was kind of a funny story. Okay, continuing here, May 17th, Bob Dylan performs at the Free Trade Hall in Manchester, England. Dylan is booed for playing "Electric." The boos culminated in the famous Judas shout. Not sure if this was the exact gig, but it was in Britain during this period when Dylan played "Like a Rolling Stone." Before the song, he told his band, and I quote, "Play fucking loud." May 23rd, R&B singer Marvin Gaye releases his sixth album titled "The Moods of Marvin Gaye." Hits from the album include "I'll Be Doggone," "Ain't That Peculiar," "One More Heartache," "Take This Heart of Mine," "Little Darling, I Need You," and "Your Unchanging Love." May 27th, British band The Yardbirds released a 45 "Over Under Sideways Down," backed with the blues boogie "Gyps Boogie." May 30th, the Beatles released a 45 "Paperback Writer," backed with "Rain." "Rain" is the first record ever to feature backmasking to it. At the end of the song, the opening lyric, "When the rain comes, they run and hide their heads," is heard in reverse, along with the droning Eastern King sound. This makes it their most psychedelic release so far. Now I'm going to go through the Beatles anthology book because they're going to talk about the inspiration of the backwards part in the song. And I'm gonna go through both, like, because it was a 45, and I'm gonna go through both songs, pretty much, of the Beatles themselves discussing the making of both songs. And Paul McCartney starts off by saying, "In this period, Paperback Writer and Rain were also recorded. John and I wrote together. I remember showing up at his house with the idea for Paperback Writer because I had a long drive to get there. I would often start thinking away and writing on my own on my way out, and I developed the whole idea in the car. I came in, had my bowl of cornflakes, and said, 'How's about it? You write a letter, dear sir or madam, next line, next paragraph, etc.' I wrote it all out, and John said, 'Yeah, that's good. It just flowed.'" And John Lennon says, "Paperback Writer is son of Day Tripper," meaning a rock and roll song with a guitar lick on a fuzzy loud guitar, "but it's Paul's song." Producer George Martin here states, "Paperback Writer had a heavier sound than some earlier work and very good vocal work too. I think that was just the way it worked out. And the rhythm was the most important part of these makeup by this time." Ringo Starr states, "The drumming on Rain stands out for me because I feel as though that was someone else playing. I was possessed." Paul McCartney states, "I don't think Rain was just John's. We sat down and wrote it together. It was John's vocal and John's feel on the song. But what gave its character was collaboration. I think it's all too easily said. It's a John song. It's a Paul song. Paul does ballads. John does rockers. John's a hard one. Paul's a soft one." That's a fallacy. There were certain songs that were very much mine and others that were definite collaborations with John, where we'd actually sit down and spend 3 hours. Then there were ones that we just be very much John's. I think it roughly split somewhere down the middle. On Rain, I remember we couldn't get a backing track, and we decided to play it fast and slow it down, which is why it's so goo, 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 and plotty. Okay. We had to play it fast and accurately, but I don't think that was John's idea. I don't remember whose it was, but it was very collaborative. I suppose the way things did go was that each of us would say, "Mine's Strawberry Fields, yours is Penny Lane." That did start to happen, but before then, things like Rain, it was that we all wanted to do it. It wasn't only John who wanted to make that kind of record. It was probably just that we'd all get an excuse to do it on his track. And John here states, "People ask me what music I listen to. I listen to traffic and birds singing and people breathing and fire engines. I also used to listen to the water pipes at night when the lights were off and they played tunes. Having musical ideas I've had have been accidental. The first time I discovered backwards guitar was when we made Rain. This was a song I wrote about people moaning about the weather all the time. I took the tracks home to see what gimmicks I could add because the song wasn't quite right. I got home from the studio stoned out of my mind on marijuana. And as I usually do, I listened to what we had recorded that day. Somehow I got it on backwards and sat there, transfixed with the earphones on, with a big hash joint. I ran in the next day and said, 'I know what to do with it. I know. Listen to this.' So I made them all play it backwards. I wanted to do the whole song backwards. We ended up with a bit of the voice at the end backwards and half the guitar backwards. That one was a gift of God, of Jah, actually, the god of marijuana. Jah gave me that one. The first backwards tape on any record anywhere, before Hendrix, before The Who, before any fucker. Maybe there was that record about, 'They're coming to take me away, haha.' Maybe that came out before Rain, but it's not the same thing. I'm Only Sleeping has got backwards guitars too." George Harrison states, "Usually if we were working on a song, we'd take a little rough mix of it home. In those days, we never used cassettes. It was always on reel to reel. John, Paul, and I each had a little reel to reel tape machines at home. They were quite good machines with 3 speeds. We were halfway through Rain and we left the studio at night. So John said, 'Can I have a rough mix of that?' In those days, they made a 3 or 4 inch spool. The copy tape. That means they would play the rough mix onto a little spool, and when they finished, they would cut the tape off and hand it to you in the box so the tail was sticking out. It's called Tails Out. John didn't know that at the time. I don't think I knew it either. So when he got home, he threaded it on his machine as if it were heads out and played it. He heard the song backwards and heard it enough to think, 'Wow, amazing.' It obviously gave him a buzz because he came in raving about it the next morning. And so we experimented. We turned the tape over and put it on backwards and then played some guitar notes to it. I think he and I both plugged in guitars, just playing little bits, guessing, hoping it fitted in. George Martin turned the master upside down and played it back. You ever excited to hear what it sounded like, and it was magic. The backwards guitarist, the way the note sounded because of the attack and the decay, it was brilliant. We got very excited and started doing that on overdub. And then there was a bit of backwards singing as well, which came out sounding like Indian singing. As time went by, the technology we were now using on records didn't allow us to play a lot of songs live on tour. In those days, there was no technology on stage as there is now. There were two guitars, bass, and drums, and that was it. If we did stuff in the studio with the aid of recording tricks, then we couldn't reproduce them on tour. You could do it now. You could do Tomorrow Never Knows. Have all the loops up there on the keyboards and emulators. You can have as many piano players and drummers and orchestras and whatever as you want. But back then, that was it. We were just a little dance hall band, and we never really thought of argumenting ourselves. We thought, well, we can't. We'll do it the best of our ability until the point where we can't really do it, and then we'll miss it out. So around this time, we were starting to miss out a lot of record tracks on live shows. Paperback Writer, for instance, was all double tracked. It sounded pretty crummy on stage. So what we did was with it in the American tour, at least, was get to the point where it was particularly bad, and then we do our Elvis legs and wave to the crowd, and they all scream, and it would cover that. As Paul said, the screaming did cover a lot of roaring moments. Ringo says the idea of making promotional films for Paperback Writer and Rain was that we didn't have to go out. We felt it was a great idea to send the film out there. I don't think we even thought of calling them videos. They were just going to be on TV. It was really exciting with Rain, with Klaus Voormann, who did that whole setup. It was a lot of fun. The Penny Lane one on the horses wasn't quite that exciting for me. It was a bit real. George Harrison states, the mania made it pretty difficult to get around, and out of convenience, so we decided we were not going into the TV studios to promote our records so much because it was too much of a hassle. We thought we'd go and make our own little films and put them on TV. So we started getting a film crew and shooting. There are a number of those films. I think the first proper ones we did were Paperback Writer and Rain and Chiswick House. They were the forerunner of videos. The idea was that we'd use them in America as well as the UK because we thought we can go everywhere. We're stopping touring and we'll send these films out to promote the record. It was too much trouble to go out and fight our way through all the screaming hordes of people to mine the latest single on Ready, Steady, Go. Also in America, they never saw the footage anyway. Once we actually went on an Ed Sullivan show with just a clip, I think Ed Sullivan came on and said, the Beatles were here, as you know, and they were wonderful boys, but they can't be here now, so they've sent us this clip. It was great, because we conned the Sullivan show into promoting our new single by sending in the film clip. These days, obviously, everybody does that. It's part of the promotion for a single. So I suppose, in a way, we invented MTV. Alright, continuing on. May 30th, Frank Sinatra releases the album Strangers in the Night. The album features the title track and Summer Wind. May 30th, Northern Ireland's Them began a three-week stint as a headliner act at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood, California. On the last night of June 18th, they are joined by The Doors and Van Morrison of Them and Jim Morrison of The Doors single Gloria together. June, Bob Dylan releases the 45 I Want You. Sam, the Sham, and the Pharaohs released the 45 Little Red Riding Hood. The Mamas and Papas released the 45 I Saw Her Again. San Francisco's Jefferson Airplane releases the 45 come up in the years, backed with Blues from an Airplane. American bluesman Slim Harpo releases the 45 Shake Your Hips. New York's The Left Bank releases the Baroque inspired 45 Walk Away Renee. Excuse me. British band The Animals released their third British album called Animalisms. It was the first album to feature keyboardist Dave Wilberry after the departure of Alan Price in 1965. Euphoria, a band from California, records a number of tracks in Houston, Texas, including the psychedelic-influenced Pick It Up. Minneapolis band, bass band, TC Atlantic releases the 45 Faces. The song features a psychedelic sound that is at least a year ahead of its time. The West Coast pop art experimental band releases their first album earlier in 1966. They began gigging in Los Angeles in June and accompanied by a psychedelic light show. British band The Hollies released their fourth British album, Would You Believe? The album features a cover of Simon and Garfunkel's I Am a Rock, a cover of Buddy Holly's Take Your Time, a cover of Chuck Berry's Sweet Little 16, and a cover of E.V. Sands' I Can't Let Go, which became a major hit for The Hollies. The cover of I Am a Rock was highly fitting at the time, as it showed signs of folk rock taking in effect. It was also a period when a lot of British bands were improvising and giving up a lot of the R&B blues covers. British band The Kinks releases the 45 Sunny Afternoon, backed with I'm Not Like Everybody Else. June 3rd, R&B singer Jimmy Ruffin releases the 45 What Becomes of the Broken Hearted. Jimmy is the older brother of Temptations singer David Ruffin. June 6th, Country Joe and the Fish releases the 45. No, releases. Excuse me. June 6th, Country Joe and the Fish record tracks for their upcoming EP release, Bass Strings. On June 13th, the Byrds released the 45 5D Fifth Dimension. June 15th, the Temptations released their fourth album titled Getting Ready. Hits from the album include Get Ready and Ain't Too Proud to Beg. On June 15th, the Beatles released the American album Yesterday and Today. The album became known for the original cover photograph. The Beatles were dressed in white coats and covered with decapitated baby dolls and pieces of raw meat. The Beatles intended on saying it was a statement against the Vietnam War. The cover photo was replaced with a shot of the Beatles around a steam trunk. Songs from the album feature songs from the B-side of the British release of Help, a few 45 releases from 1965, content from the British release of Rubber Soul, and some content from their upcoming 7th British album. As of January 2nd, 2015, the original Butcher cover, as it was called, is worth about $6,875. A sealed copy of the original photo is worth about $20,000. Some album collectors may own a copy in paste version, where the replacement photo was pasted on the original Butcher cover. You can make out the original photo. June 17th, British band Hermans releases the 45. This Door Swings Both Ways. June 17th, British band The Creation releases the 45, Making Time. It was one of the first rock songs to feature a guitar being played with a bow. June 17th, British band The Hollies released the 45 Bus Stop, which became one of their popular hits. June 18th, at a drunken gig at the Queen's College in Oxford, England, bass guitarist of the Yardbirds, Paul Samuel Smith, quits in disgust. He is then replaced by Jimmy Page. June 20th, Bob Dylan releases his seventh album, titled Blonde on Blonde. It is known as rock's first double album, meaning it was a two-record set. The album features Dylan's brand of surrealism. The recording sessions began on October 5th, 1965 in New York, but was then quickly aborted as Dylan grew frustrated with the slow pace of the sessions. Producer Bob Johnston suggested they take the sessions to Nashville. Two of Dylan's bandmates accompanied him, Al Kooper and Robbie Robertson. But the remaining musicians were seasoned Nashville players who played with Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry. The album featured the hits Rainy Day Woman number 12 and 35, in which Dylan demanded that everybody must get stoned, Visions of Johanna, One of Us Must Know Sooner or Later, I Want You, Stuck Inside a Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again, Just Like a Woman, and Most Likely You Go Your Way and I'll Go Mine. The album features the song Fourth Time Around, which was said to be a response to the Beatles' Norwegian Wood, This Bird Has Flown. In fact, both songs share a reasonably similar melody, lyrical premise, and three-fourths time signature. The album's closing track is the 11-minute, 23-second Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. The album's gatefold cover was a large, blurred image of Dylan. Although the album was not overly LSD-influenced, the song listed have a massive influence on the burgeoning psychedelic scene through its lengthy songs. Dylan was delighted with the results. In the 1977 interview with Playboy magazine, he commented, "The closest I ever got to the sound I hear in my mind was on individual bands in the Blonde on Blonde album. It's that thin, wild mercury sound. It's metallic and bright gold." June 27th, the Mothers of Invention releases their debut album, titled Freak Out. The album was a double album and was considered as rock's first concept album. The album features elements of psychedelia and contains some backmasking effects. Highlights include Hungry Freaks Daddy, I Ain't Got No Heart, Who Are the Brain Police, Motherly Love, How Could I Be Such a Fool, Wowie Zowie, and Trouble Every Day. Frank Zappa wrote Trouble Every Day in response to the 1965 Watts riots in Los Angeles, California, after watching the images on television. In the song, Zappa states, "Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white." In the Netflix documentary, Echoes in the Canyon, Stephen Stills of Buffalo Springfield talks about a moment living in Little Canyon and living across the street from Frank Zappa. And there was a time when Zappa comes out reciting the lyrics to Who Are the Brain Police in the middle of the street. Stills was almost going nuts and almost compared him to poet Allen Ginsberg. It was said that Frank Zappa never tried LSD and wasn't too fond of the hippie culture. Paul McCartney enjoyed the album Freak Out. He mostly enjoyed the concept that the album had. And lastly, June 28th, Stevie Wonder releases a cover of Bob Dylan's Blown in the Wind, 45. That's all I have. Pretty informative, lengthy this week, a little bit lengthier than last time. Thank you for listening. I hope next time I have the third part, which is between July through September. Until then, thank you again. And I want to thank Anchor Podcast, which is my podcast platform, and everybody who included my podcasts into their apps, like Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, to name a few, you know, Apple Podcasts. But yeah, thank you. My email address is markrock77@gmail.com. I appreciate feedback. Please leave me some feedback if you desire. It's been on my Facebook page too, Mark Inocito. And I thank you again, and God bless. Until next time.